Ooh, it sure is. And we're going to take your ghostly phone calls. I'm going to open up a special hotline for this hour. Each hour, it'll be a separate topic, but you can still call in with your ghost stories. Here's the phone number, first of all, for the Pure Evil Hotline. Somewhere in your life, you have witnessed pure evil. Here's that phone number, 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. You know, one of our regular guests here on Coast to Coast AM is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, as she writes about the supernatural, ghosts, dreams, and also she was my writing partner with Talking to the Dead. She has a ghost story.
One of the creepiest things that ever happened to me occurred during an investigation in a remote rural area in the Mid-Atlantic, and I can say that it was near West Virginia. It was on private property. And this was a farm place that had a lot of unrelenting, very disturbing activity. And I put together a team of paranormal investigators to collect evidence and check it out. And on one occasion, we had one of the most hair-raising experiences that any of us had ever had. We went out during the daytime, and we were staying through the night. We saw mystery lights moving around on the property, dark shadows. We'd heard stories about mutilated animals in the area, something that was killing the chickens on the farm. We saw the apparition of a man who manifested in the house while we were running EVP. We were there by ourselves. We were in an area with no cell phone communication, just a landline. And in the evening, things got even more disturbing. We were doing EVP, and shadow figures started coming into the house. They were huge, and they threw off this malevolence, this awful energy. And I said out loud, "You will not touch any of us," because they were starting to come closer. And all of our cameras went dead. Then, later on in the evening, we tried to make a phone call out to the man who ran the place. He said he was worried about us. The phone line was dead, so we were totally cut off from communication. There was no indoor plumbing. When we tried to go outside to the outhouse, we couldn't get out the door. It was jammed tight, and not even the biggest guys in the group could get it open. And then all of a sudden, the door flew open by itself. The atmosphere got so ugly and oppressive that we decided that it was time to pack up and leave. So we cut our investigation short and started packing up our equipment, and the shadow figures followed us out to our cars as we loaded up. I had the feeling they were glaring at us like good riddance. And that was one of the creepiest nights I've ever had. I've never run screaming from a place, but sometimes you know when it's just time to make a prudent exit.
Ah, yes, that's producer Tom having opened up his last check I gave him. Ghost to Ghost continues. Let's go to Carrie Vancouver. Been holding for a long time. Carrie, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
No problem. How you doing, Jerry?
Good, Carrie. Good.
Well, I guess I'll tell you an experience that I had when I was 16 years old, and this caused me to lose a lot of sleep for almost an entire year. But it was very early in the year, and I woke up in my bedroom, and I realized I wasn't alone. And I looked over, and I see this figure standing there. And I swear to God, this thing looked like the figure of death. You know, had the skull face, had the cloak on, scythe, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of in disbelief, kind of shocked at that point. And I looked away, and I did what I heard everybody else do when they believe they're dreaming. You know, pinched the palm of my hand as hard as I could and looked back, and it's still standing there. And I go, "Well, are you here for me?" And it said, "No, I'm your guardian angel. I'm going to show you what's going to happen to you this year." And it's kind of hard to explain. It's I didn't get any images of anything. I just knew things that were going to happen. And it was conveyed to me in like a second and a half. But it stopped at a certain date. I said, "Well, why did you stop on October the 23rd? And he said, "For you, there is no more."
Oh, my God.
And he disappeared. Yeah, that's pretty well what I said, too. And then he disappeared. So, you know, I'm up the rest of the night thinking, okay, this is...
this is it.
This year, yeah. You know? And then things started to happen. They started to come true. You know, trips that I was showing that I was going to take and courses I was going to be on. All this stuff started to happen. And now I'm starting to walk on eggshells. You know, now we're up to October the 19th. I get this phone call. I'm an air cadet. I'm a bugler. I know all the bugle calls and things. And my captain phones me up. And he says, we just had a high-level dignitary die. We're going to have a military funeral. They want you to play the last post, our equivalent of Taps. And I said, yeah, sure, okay, what's the date? And he said, October 23rd. I went, what? And he goes, well, they don't keep the bodies around very long, you know. That's, well,
not
that's
at all.
That's why I was, you know, confused about that date. But so October 23rd, I'm at a funeral. I'm figuring I'm going to die in a car accident going there.
Did you really believe that?
Yes, I did. Okay. When all the stuff started to come true, I was given a date where I saw nothing afterwards or knew nothing was going to happen afterwards. So, you know, to me, I figured my life was over at that point. And we went through the funeral. I figured I was going to die in an accident on the way back. And for the rest of the year, I was the most cautious person you saw. But it wasn't until the year ended that I realized that there was nothing else that happened that was significant that would stick in the mind. Everything else was boring after that. So I guess for me, there's nothing else.
So let's look about the future if we can, carry. Maybe one day, a long time from now, God willing, you die on October 23rd.
Well, that would suck. You know, I'd like to make it to my next birthday, which is on the 26th.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Even if you're going to be 90, you want to make it to the next birthday.
Well, you know what? I'll never die any younger. So.
You got that. That's a great story. Hey, have a great Halloween.
Same to you. Take care, George.
Okay, let's go to Jessica, Fall Rivers, Massachusetts. Hey, Jessica, welcome to the program. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Happy,
how are you?
Happy Halloween to you.
You too. I was calling to let you know something that happened to me. I was 15 or 16 years old. I was in my house that I was brought up in, and I have a twin sister who we both lived, our bedrooms were on the second floor.
Okay.
And there was no doors separating the two. It was kind of like the loft ceilings. And she went to bed early, and I was cleaning my room, like rearranging it, moving my bed, dusting, vacuuming. It was a late night. I fell asleep like I always do with my TV on. Still, I sleep with my TV on.
Yeah.
And I woke up, and I was very cold. My body was completely stiff, and my face, my head was positioned looking at the TV, and I couldn't move. And the TV was like a black background, and it was just kind of like the glowing shadow, like the wrinkles of like a man's eyes.
Ugh.
And it was just staring deep into my eyes, like shaking its head, like disappointed at me. You know what I mean? And I was probably in that position like 2 minutes, maybe. All of a sudden the room warmed up and I felt my body drop to my mattress, and I ran as fast as I could into my sister's room. And I woke her up and I told her what happened. She's like, oh yeah, let's go see. So as we're walking out of her room, this white cloud figure pops up out of where my bed is, and it starts moving towards us like in a leaving, like motion. And we both ran down the steps. My father, he always slept on the couch, and we woke him up. And he went upstairs. He saw nothing, and my brother and my mother woke up. They were like, what the heck is going on? They thought someone was like breaking in or something.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody went to bed. I didn't. Next day, the priest, who was best friends with my parents at the time, he came over and he blessed the house. And he spoke with the both of them outside, my parents, saying, whatever it is, it doesn't feel good. Just, he gave us a list of things to do.
Wow. Needless now, to say, who called the priest up, Jessica? Did your parents call the priest? Who called the priest to come in?
Oh, he had the key to our house. He would be making dinner when I came home from school. Like,
okay.
He was there all the time.
Okay.
It was a very weird thing.
Yeah.
But anyways, we ended up, I would sleep in the middle of my sister and my father on the floor for, I want to say, like 5 months. And finally, yeah, I was scared. Every day, every night at 3 o'clock in the morning, which was the same time that original incident happened, I would wake up and I would see the outline of those eyes, but the TV would be on, like, in the middle of whatever broadcast. It wasn't like a black background. And I would shake my father to wake him up. And then the second he would wake up, that image in the TV would be gone. And it was like almost like messing with me. So I end up trying to fall back asleep and it would never happen. So my father finally said, this is ridiculous. My sister had already started sleeping up in her room at this point.
Yeah, she was okay. And yeah.
Yeah, he was like getting annoyed with it because he always believed that I did see something. He never doubted that, but he thought that it was like my imagination or, you know, I was afraid. So he made me sleep upstairs. I didn't go in my bedroom. I slept on the floor of my sister's bed, like where her bed was. I slept right on the floor and she was on the phone and I was dozing off and I felt something almost like in my body. I could feel my body raising up a bit. And I remember like trying to just move a limb. I remember it was my right leg. I was just trying to lift it up and it just wouldn't happen. All of a sudden I fell to the ground and my leg went flying up and my sister kind of just like looked down at me like, what the hell are you doing? So my sister ended up getting pregnant at a young age. She moved out. My brother went away to college. My parents got a divorce. So it was just my father and I that were living in that house. And we swapped rooms. I moved downstairs to my brother's room and he made upstairs his little apartment. So one day I went out to the party. He told me to be home for a certain time. And he was in bed and he got up to go and check on me. Now, my dad's telling this story to my sister when she was in labor.
Yeah.
He told her never to tell me.
He's telling her this while she's having a baby?
Yeah, just to kind of like, you know, take her mind off of everything.
I guess so.
And he's like, don't ever tell your sister this. So she ends up telling me, of course, with twins. She tells me everything. And she said, he went downstairs to check on me. I was there. Now, mind you, he was in his bed under the covers. This is the middle of the night. And then he goes back upstairs once he knows I'm home. And his bed is completely made, tucked in. From that point, he believed everything that I had ever told him
now,
about that house.
To this day, Jessica, does this thing still hang around?
Actually, my father, when he moved out, some things happened, so I'm okay with that following him. But I'll tell you what, listening to this program while I was waiting for you to get to my phone call, I'm in my car, and I'm, like, so scared. I'm, like, biting my nails. It haunts me to this day.
All right. Well, you be careful. That's a great story. Thanks, Jessica. Pure Evil Hotline this hour, Alex, Fort Myers, Florida, on that line. Alex, what do you got for us?
How you doing, George?
Good, Alex.
Good. The weather's nice down here. It's only 70 degrees.
Oh, that's beautiful.
My pure evil story. I went to a really bad part of town here in Florida, and it's the ghetto of the ghetto. You know, the place is like a war zone. And I'm totally sober, mind you. And I come walking up into this neighborhood, Pine Manor, the manor. I come to this corner, and there's a street light. And there's this wall, this great big long wall in this house. And all of a sudden, I saw the shadow man. And as soon as I saw it, I knew. I could feel the pure evil and the hatred coming off of this, just like some vibe, this energy, right? So I'm looking at it as a shadow man, and he's wearing the hat. And all of a sudden, George, just with a blink of an eye, boom, it changed form. It changed into a shadow extraterrestrial, you know, like a gray.
Huh.
You there?
Yeah.
Yeah, so after I'm watching it, it just changed the shadow man.
But, I mean, where'd you feel the evil part of that, Alex?
It was just like a vibe. I mean, because this thing was probably 30 feet in front of me, you know. You could just feel it. And the fact that it started changing forms, I mean, it was so paranormal, and it changed form into like a gray, an extraterrestrial alien, and he was smoking something, you know?
Well, let me tell you something. a lot of people will see these gray-looking ETs. And a lot of people say they're not very friendly, believe it or not. So maybe it's very possible that that happened to you as well. You felt that pure evil. We go next to John in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Hey, John, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, John.
Yep, I've been waiting a long time to tell this story.
All right, I'm looking forward to it.
I was on hold without Bill one time, or I must have fell asleep.
That was a long time ago.
A long time ago, and I still got my CC radio playing 20 years now.
Oh, super. It's a great radio, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what do you got?
Okay, like back in 1970, I just was coming home from Vietnam. You know, spent a few days in Oki and then San Diego, got discharged, and then came home. Visited the people in the neighborhood and stuff like that, my friends. So then I came home. This was my mother's house, you know, and our grandparents' house. And I'm laying on the couch at night, and I'm falling asleep, and I was very, very light sleeping. You know, you just come home from a war zone, so you sleep like with an eye open. And all of a sudden, I swear I see movement. And I'm looking, and it's like a small figure, and it's walking toward me. And I'm trying to make out what it is, and I see like a lot, it's like all, like a blur, but it looked like bloody and stuff. And I says, and it come up to me, and like it sat on my chest and started putting its hands on my throat.
Jeez.
I swung as hard as I could. I end up, next thing I know, I'm on my hands and knees on the floor because I was sleeping on the couch. And I goes, what the heck is that? I says, I don't know, maybe I'm having a nightmare from, you know, from the war and stuff like that. And I put it aside and didn't think too much about it. Years go by, and we're sitting at the family dinner one time, and my mother's talking to us, and my uncle's getting out of the Navy, and he's going to come by, and they were going to fix a room up for him. And my mother says, well, don't put him in that last room. And that was one of the room that I slept in when I lived there. And I says, oh, why can't he go in that room? Says, well, he's afraid of the ghost. He goes, what? What do you mean afraid of ghosts? And I started thinking now, and when I was a kid, I remember, like, I used to get a little nervous in that room. And
you could feel it.
I swear that I used to hear noises, and a couple of times I swore the hairbrush would be moved to something out of a little tray on the bureau. And my mother says, well, your grandfather's sister, when she was a small girl, she was hit by a drunk driver.
Oh, God.
In front of the house. And I guess it was the man, he was affluent. And there was some money exchanged between my great-grandfather and, you know, I don't know, it was, in other words, it was like a sort of a raw deal, and nobody paid the penalty for it.
Right, he paid right. And I assume she died from that accident, right?
Right. Oh. And I says, oh, my God, now I'm saying, well.
Now it is.
And I started thinking, my God, was this the thing that come for me? I mean, well, it come to, you know, at first I thought it was might have been the hag lady because I heard Art talk about it.
It was the little girl.
And then I says, oh, Jesus. Then I started saying, my God, was this what I used to, when I was a kid, and I thought I saw a little shadow moving, or I heard noises and everything, but I said, wow, that's scary. What a scary.
And maybe she was upset, John, because nobody paid the price for her murder, for her death. It wasn't really murder. She was just sadly killed in a car accident. And this hour, the Pure Evil Hotline at 818-817-0021. We'll be back with your stories in just a moment.
Happy Halloween.
Now that sounds like Kane Hodder, doesn't it? Jason Voorhees. All right, let's go to the phones. Ghost to ghost here. Gabriel in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Gabe, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, how's it going?
It's great. I have to tell you this. I've only known a few Gabriels. My dad was one of them, so it's good to have you on the program.
It's good to talk to you again. I actually talked to you, I think, a long time ago when you had Nick Pope on.
You sure did.
So, yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while since I talked to you, but I wanted to call in and just give my piece tonight on the Ghost to Ghost. This is the first time I've ever listened to it on Halloween.
Sure.
All right, well, I was really, really young when my mom told me the story of the place I'm going to tell you I went to. And at the time, I mean, I was just too young to kind of comprehend it that I would ever be visiting it. I was living in New Mexico, but she talked about a place in Texas, and most of my family was from San Antonio. And she said that it was around there and that there was a railroad track. It was in a rural area and there was one community connected to it. And apparently, I guess, maybe in the 70s or 80s, before my time, there was a school bus full of children that in some way or somehow got stuck on the railroad track at an unfortunate time. And the bus driver could not get the kids off. And the bus was hit and the children died. And that's the story that I was told. And my mom told me about it. I didn't much believe anything or didn't know, you know, have any validity of it. But anyway, so I fast forward till I'm 17 years old and I'm in Texas visiting family. I was living down here in Tampa, Florida at the time. And I went to see some cousins and they said, you know, there's nothing really much to do around here. Do you guys want to go see this old railroad track that apparently, you know, these kids died at? Yeah. And there's paranormal activity there. And I said, sure, yeah, we'll go. So we went out there and in a big H2 Hummer, and we go out to these railroad tracks, and there is a line of people. There is a whole line, which was the first thing that really blew my mind and, like, gave, you know, some kind of truthfulness to the story was that it's, you know, probably Wednesday, Thursday night in the middle of the week, and there's 10, 15 people out there stopped at the railroad tracks, and they're all, you know, mostly kids waiting to do this, to pull their car up to the tracks. And we were next in line, so we go ahead and pull up, and it is a incline. It is so hard to explain, but it literally looks like if you were to pull up on the railroad tracks, as if the bus did, that you would roll down this incline that you pulled up on. And we pull up on near the tracks, right where the white line is to stop for the bar to come down, and he puts his Hummer in neutral, which is what you're supposed to do.
That's right.
And it kind of rolls back as if you set the parking brake, but then it stops and the car slowly starts rolling forward. And I told your call screener, I'm a typical skeptic. I don't disbelieve ghosts or anything, but I've never seen an apparition. I didn't see an apparition this time, but I did experience it. And it was just the most unnerving thing. We got pushed uphill over these railroad tracks nothing and pushed all the way over. You know, didn't rest on the end, and there was a decline on the other side, and we got pushed all the way over. And when we got over the other side, he put his car in park again and was kind of just shocked. My cousin looked around the car at all of us, and we're all still kind of in shock and laughing about it. And he puts his car in neutral, and the same thing happens. It kind of rolls forward as it's on this decline and then stops rolling back. And, I mean, this is a Hummer, so... And it worked both ways. You know, when we pulled over the other side of the track, we still got pushed over the other side as soon as you put it in neutral back the way we came. So I just had a, you know, call about it. Maybe somebody else has heard about it and knows where it's exactly located, but apparently it's just a well-known area, and it's such a strange phenomenon that I actually got to experience, and I can say I believe now.
Well, and it's strange. And I had heard in some of these areas, there have been a couple of them like that, where if you put baby powder on your bumper, you will see the imprints of little hands like it's pushing the car up the hill. It's really weird. Let's go to another ghost story. We'll go to Tuesday in Long Beach, California. Tuesday.
Hi, George. Can I give a shout out to my uncle who listens to you faithfully every night?
You sure can.
His name is, hi, Uncle Chuck. This is your niece, Tuesday. So he's a big fan of
Colleen on Thursday.
Yes, absolutely. You know, George, I live in a haunted house. I guess this is what they call it because, I mean, it was a childhood home of my parents. I raised here and then moved away, of course, for a couple of years and then moved back here when I got married. And I remember some things happening to me as a kid, but then... it kind of stopped for a long time, and after I had my children, things started happening again. So, first time that happened to me, I was pulled out of bed by something I couldn't see.
I mean, just yanked right out of bed?
Well, it wasn't really yanked. It started off slowly by one night feeling something touch my shoulder, and then the bed kept moving back and forth every night. And so I thought, am I the only one noticing? And I asked my husband, because, yeah, I think we're having earthquakes. We're living in California. You think you're having earthquakes? Well, we weren't. And so it led up to be where he went to his brother's house, and I was home with my kids, and the dog and the cat wouldn't get up on the bed with me. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? Get up here. And so next thing I know, the covers kept like feel like they were being pulled down, and I pulled them back up, and I looked around to see what that was, and then I felt something slithering around my feet.
Like a snake?
And so, of course, I pulled my feet back, and I jumped out of bed, pulled the covers back. This was not supposed to be my story, but I thought this would be more better anyway.
So this is the first time. You've got a frisky ghost or a frisky snake. I'm not sure.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So, but, you know, I felt something slithering really around my ankles, my feet, you know, and so, of course, nothing was there, and I thought, well, this is crazy. Got back in bed again, and then it stopped. It was fine. The next night, went to bed again, and I felt the bed going back and forth again, and then I felt something around my feet. So I laid there still and didn't move and thought, okay, I'm going to see what this is going to do next. And that's when I felt my covers tug real hard on me. And I still didn't move. I was like almost like I felt like I was froze.
I'd get out of there Tuesday.
Well,
I'd be long gone.
Sure what, I wasn't sure yet because it wasn't enough to say I would say something supernatural was doing it until after that same thought that came in my head. Next thing I know, I felt a hand grab one ankle, and I felt a hand grab the other ankle, and it just pulled me right out of bed, and the covers went flying. That's when I hit the floor, and I mean, I must have been up on my feet, and I was running to that front door.
Well, I don't know what took you so long.
I don't know what took me so long either, but as I got closer to the front door, I felt something grab the back of my shirt and pulled me backwards on it, and that's when I, you know, finally grabbed the phone, and I, you know, yelled, let go of me, and out that front door I went and called a friend, and so she came over right away, and she goes, did you check the kids? I says, I'm not going back in that house. She goes, you got to go check your kids. Well, I says, they're not screaming, so they're okay, I guess, on it. But her and I walked in that house hand in hand and stayed up all night long, you know, because we were so scared, but that was just the start of something horrible for a whole year.
You mean everything went wrong?
Oh, well, I was attacked. There was just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ghosts going through this house constantly.
Oh my God.
I mean, and that's just the mild form of it, and because it increased over the years and stuff. But it took me a long time, you know, to understand what was going wrong. I mean, it. I mean, that next morning I went to see a priest, and I wasn't even Catholic, and I was so hysterical in trying to tell him what happened that he couldn't get me to calm down, and I wouldn't sleep in the house. I slept in the car out in the front for a couple nights when it first happened because it scared me so bad on it. And so I wouldn't even come back in my bedroom for almost a year.
Jeez.
A year. I would not come back in this bedroom, but it didn't help. I mean, it didn't make a difference because I still was being touched and there were still ghosts walking through the house constantly.
And what about today? All gone?
Today I have better control over it. Today it's not as bad. We still have ghosts, you know, our residential ghosts that we call them. That come in through, you know, to the house. I mean, we've had so many different experiences in this house that we've had Edison out here, but I've had tons of paranormal investigators come through here just to experience what's really going on here on it. And the only thing we can come to conclusion is that it's, we have found with Dr. Barry Taff has been out here and really some fabulous, absolutely fabulous paranormal investigators. Who
they're good people.
Really, they really, truly are. They really are. They've helped an awful lot on it. And but to understand really, though, is it me? Is it the area? Is it the fact that we're on a fault line?
Or all of the above?
All the above. You know, really, it has to be on that. But the fact of it is that sometimes you have to coexist with these ghosts because it's not that they're stuck. They're just fine with what they're doing.
This could be the perfect storm for ghosts. You may be in the right spot, you may have that right complexity, and they're there. And they just, you know, you're like a ghost magnet. Let's go to Bruce in Tucson, Arizona. First time caller line. Bruce, thank you. You are on the air, I think. Bruce, you with us? Nope. He's gone. Let's go to West. Oh, I was talking to the wrong person, wasn't I? There's Bruce.
Yes.
There you go. You're probably going, I'm here.
Yes.
There you go. Thanks for holding, Bruce.
Well, thank you. Back in 1964, when I was a senior in high school, I went on the Papago Indian Reservation, as it was known then. The tribe, sometime after that, changed the name to their original name, Tohono O'odham. You probably heard of them.
Yes, I sure have.
Yes. Well, I had heard all the way through high school about this Indian legend, which goes back, of course, many, many years prior to my 61 to 65 years in high school, 4 years. I was at the Santa Cruz River with another cousin of mine who was a year behind me in school. And we're sitting out there on the Santa Cruz one night, and we saw this mist start up. And because of the mist, suddenly we saw that Indian legend, the one they call La Llorona.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Which is the weeping woman. Have you ever heard of that particular story?
I've heard of the weeping woman down by the river.
That's it.
Yeah. She has something to do with her children, right?
Exactly right. She comes along the shore of the Santa Cruz right near the Santa Vera Mission, which is a very, very historical Catholic mission going back to the 1800s, apparently.
This is a very sad ghost entity, isn't it?
Oh, yes, very much so. Exactly. And as a result, suddenly we look up and we see this woman riding bareback on a horse.
Jeez.
And she kind of cried out with real eerie sounds. I remember it very clearly, even though it happened many, many, many years ago. And it was an instance of we just took off running and got in our car and split. And then about a month later, we came back, and once again, we saw her again. And it was really eerie, but yet she didn't really threaten us or anything like that. But at one time,
well, you know, though, if you see her or she looks at you, aren't you supposed to die?
I don't know about that because I don't remember her actually looking at us. She kind of went by us to where we could see her face and her features and such as that.
But did she look like she knew you were there?
The first time I would say possibly. The second time, I really don't know. And that was the only two experiences that I had out there. And I had mentioned it to some of the teachers, and one of them was Native American from the same tribe himself, and he said that he had been out there several times and had spotted her too.
Jeez. Well, now, what finally happened?
Finally, she just kind of disappeared into a mist both times, actually.
She's out there quite a bit. That's a great story. I mean, a lot of people have seen her. And it's a sad story. You know, whenever kids are involved in these stories, it's sad. It really is. There's a movie out. It's an old one called The Woman in White. If you haven't seen it, get it. I don't know if you can get it on Netflix or not. I don't know. But, you know, that too has to do with children. And it is it's a scary movie. It's got a happy ending, but it's very, very strange. It really is. Let's take another quick call before the top of the hour. We go to the Pure Evil Line, Tracy in Nebraska. Hey, Tracy, go ahead.
Hi.
Howdy.
Well, when we first, this house, to give you an idea, we had sold our house, and we were looking for somewhere to live in the interim while we found another house.
Okay.
So we only lived in this house for about a month. When we first got there, this was this huge three-story house, and it was absolutely gorgeous. We come up on the porch, and here's all these Japanese beetles. It looked like, you know, the ladybugs, only they're yellow.
Yeah.
And they're just covering the whole front of the house. And it's got this huge wraparound porch, and we're like, oh, well, you know, we'll look at it. The house was gorgeous. Well, we walked in, and here's all these religious candles of, you know, like has the pictures of the Madonna and, you know, the big, tall religious candles.
Right.
And
right.
There are over 30 of these candles all over the house.
All lit up?
Yeah, well, no, they had been burned. And I asked the landlord, I said, you know, I just joked, and I just said, oh, well, was someone trying to chase away the ghosts or the spooks? And he just went, shh, don't talk about that. Like,
the whole place is haunted.
Yeah. So we moved into this house, and it was a gorgeous, like I said, it was a three-story house. Well, we found out later on that there was another house. Right between us was this little tiny house, and then right next to us was another three-story house that was identical. As it turned out, this man who was the steel man, he owned a steel company in the company in the city. He built this house, and then he built one identical for his daughter. And the tiny little house originally was a carriage house, and there was an old tunnel that went between the two big houses, which we found that out about that later. But when we moved in, after about 3 days, my daughter's on the third floor was this, in one of the bedrooms, was this old brass bed they said had been up there since the house was built, and you couldn't get it down because it was an old house. It had the smaller stairways, and that was actually her bed. Well, my daughter told me, she said, the first night, we were all excited. We didn't even have the electricity turned on, but, you know, we were excited about staying in this house, and we all decided we're going to just go ahead and stay in this house this night. And she told me, she says, Mom, I kept hearing steps going up the stairs. And, you know, in an old house, you hear stairs.
You hear the creaking, yeah.
Yes. And she says, I thought it was you or Dad. And she says, I looked down and, you know, down the stairway, and she says, but there were no lights on. And she said that she kept smelling smoke. Well, later on, you know, a couple days later, and I just, you know, kind of blew it off. I said, oh, someone's probably burning their fireplace. I was in, the house had, on the first floor was a living room, on the second floor was another living room. Both of them had big fireplaces. And I was on the second floor, and I started smelling smoke.
All right, I'm going to I'm going to hold you over, Trace, so just stay right where you are, because I've got to get this break in. We'll be right back.